Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin, joined tonight, hopefully, with co-host Jonathan Miklos. Trey may be calling in, Sonny, Cuervo, all the guys. So, hope everyone had a great week. We were on Wednesday night, I believe it was. Did a show, recapped the AFC, NFC championship games to preview a little bit of the Super Bowl. And here we are again, first Sunday in a long time without football. But if you consider the Pro Bowl football, I guess it's still not a Sunday without it. But it's kind of hard to watch the Pro Bowl, especially when most of the Pro Bowls are playing in the Super Bowl. So I still don't understand why they don't make the Pro Bowl 2 weeks after the Super Bowl so everyone can earn the right to be there, can be there. But we will talk about that Super Bowl that's upcoming in California. Ready to see the Carolina Panthers right now, a 6-point favorite over the Denver Broncos. See what happens. You never know what can happen in one game, one night, 2 weeks separating. I mean, will Carolina be hot like they were hot the last few weeks? Will Denver be able to stop Carolina? There's a lot of questions that we're going to answer for you here, hopefully. But seeing Eli Manning in a Pro Bowl, Jonathan. I mean, welcome, Jonathan, to the show, but how does Eli Manning make a Pro Bowl?
Well, because a record number of players decided they weren't going to play this year all across the league, every position. It was really unheard of how many guys dropped out. And that's how Eli Manning got in. It's the same way Jameis Winston got in, Logan Macon, all those guys.
Well, I mean, I can say Jameis actually earned that Pro Bowl. I think that's how Cam got in his first year. If I'm correct on that, I could be wrong. But you know, Eli Manning been there a long time. Really didn't do anything with his team. Jameis made Tampa Bay a decent team. I mean, he had good numbers for a rookie. I think Jameis deserved a Pro Bowl this year.
Well, I mean, I could always make the case that he definitely has more of an argument than Eli Manning. And obviously, I'm very happy with Jameis. I thought he did a pretty good job for being, you know, the number one overall pick as a quarterback usually tends to have an extremely tough time. It's just because they're going to the worst team in football. Let's be honest. How you get that pick? So I thought he did a pretty successful job. I actually would have liked to have seen if Mariota could have stayed healthy for a full year. To see that side-by-side comparison, if you will, but also from the standpoint of just to see Mariota play. I mean, it's definitely created an interesting debate, though, with Jameis is how far along is this kid going to go? Is he going to be like an Andrew Luck-type player? I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, it was funny. After, like, the first couple of weeks, people were like, see, Mariota's the best quarterback, and then he just dropped off. So, I mean, you know, that first year, you never know what can happen. But as far as consistency goes, Jameis is on the right track. You know, he's on the right track. He keeps his head up. He keeps out of trouble. He keeps maturing. You never know where it's going to take him. He's a winner. We know that. Starting, he's a great athlete with a big-time arm. He can run when he has to. And he's a leader. So we'll see about old famous Jameis and see what happens with him. But, you know, this Pro Bowl may be okay, you know. But I still, Jonathan, would like to see 2 weeks after the Super Bowl's played, let these players rest up a little bit and see Cam Newton, see Peyton, see some of these, Luke Kuechly, some of these guys that I like to watch that actually were voted into the Pro Bowl play, you know. I mean, I just don't understand why they do it before the Super Bowl. I know TV and all, but who cares?
Yeah, I mean, it's because it's a dead week, and they're just trying to fill that weekend, you know, because they feel that playing it the weekend between, the ratings will be higher than they will be playing it the week after Super Bowl. Because, I mean, it's like a lot of people forgot that the Pro Bowl existed when it was the week after the Super Bowl. Because once the Super Bowl happens, the year's over. You don't really think about it. You know, when it's in between, it can get a little more airtime. So I understand why they have it like that. But I just think they need to do away with it altogether. It's a joke.
Yeah, that's a good point of view you had about the ratings. And you're right. Once the season's over, it's over. It's like playing a bowl game after the national championship, you know, like we've had before. Remember that? Where it really doesn't really matter. It's like, okay, season's over. We know who the champion is. Nobody cares about your game. But, yeah, maybe – and it's like the NBA All-Star game as well, Major League Baseball All-Star game. To me, it's, I mean, baseball actually means something, I guess, with the home field advantage, which is a joke, if you ask me. But, I mean, all these All-Star games are – they're just not All-Star games. To me, they don't mean anything. But anyway, I'm not going to get on my soapbox tonight. But tonight, Jonathan, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about some college recruiting, national. And I want to talk to you about this real quick. National Signing Day. What is going on with National Signing Day? Because usually it's just so many things going on and it's just quiet, which something big's going to happen on Signing Day or nothing really dramatic is going to happen. Which one is it? Why has it been so quiet? I mean, these kids seem like they're staying committed. It's like they wherever they're going, but there's still some big-time names out there, but there's just not a lot of drama this year, no interest, really.
Well, it's because a lot of the big names haven't decided on anything yet. And I think that, you know, we think we have a beat on what they're doing, but in all honesty, a lot of the bigger names haven't, they haven't made a decision. They're not big media personalities. You know, in years past, we've had guys that have done a good job of garnering media attention. Jadeveon Clowney did a phenomenal job with it. I mean, he pushed back signing day 2 weeks just because he felt like it. You know, so it's really, I think it's a combination of a couple of things. Also, you don't have that small school this year that's come out of nowhere to kind of steal attention. And that's usually something we're always looking forward to. But now it doesn't really surprise anybody if Ole Miss has a big year in recruiting. And after what came out this week, I think we all understand why Ole Miss has some big weeks or some big years. But, you know, we don't have a team like a BYU or a Texas Tech coming out of nowhere, sneaking up and stealing a couple 4-stars and making you do a double take and go, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, Ole Miss up there in the top five. And I'm gonna talk about the Auburn Tigers. We'll talk about Florida State as well, since that's the teams we support. Auburn this year, quietly, you know, after losing their entire coaching staff, especially on the defensive side, I won't say they lost their offensive line coach, Muschamp left, took a lot. They struggled on the field. They actually got better as the year went on, finished 7-6. And, Jonathan, as an Auburn fan, as someone that follows recruiting and thinks it's very important, I mean, am I stupid to say that if Auburn finishes in the top 10 of recruiting, that I'm satisfied with that this year? I mean, every year you can't get top five, but if Auburn finishes in the top 10 somewhere, I think that's a huge year for Auburn, considering what's happened off the field, really.
Well, my whole thing is, and I know, I get it, Alabama's won championship after championship, and they've had number one class after number one class. But I feel like you don't always need a number one class. I feel like having being consistently in the top 10 every year, you know, with a one number one class once in a while is what teams should aspire to. Because the problem is, if you have a number one class every year, well, You're going to have the infighting with a lot of the same kids at same positions and all the other nonsense. So I think it's better to have a top 10 class. I think Auburn's done a very good job this year with the class they've put together. I mean, that's definitely, you know, I'm seeing success. And Gus Malzahn, in all reality, you just need a top 10 to be comfortable with him again.
Look at Clemson, Jonathan. I mean, they didn't have number one classes. They they've been consistently up there in the top 15. And that team was just as good as Alabama was. It's all about the quarterback, isn't it? The consistency, like you talked about. But it's all mm-hmm. about the quarterback as well. If Auburn finds a quarterback this year, if one of these guys work out, all of a sudden Auburn could be that playoff team like Clemson was. It doesn't take number one recruiting classes every year to win championships, or Alabama would win them all. They've won some, but they haven't won them all. But the top 10 class, you know, the year where really this is not a big year for Auburn. I mean, they're filling needs. You know, they're going in there filling needs, building some depth. That's what this is about. But I see LSU up at the very top right now. I mean, look, how in God's name did LSU, right, with Les Miles about to get fired and they struggled. They have 17 4-stars, a 5-star, and 5 3-stars. I mean, that's a monster class, and we're not finished yet.
Yeah, I mean, LSU year after year puts together a great classes. And the reason LSU has that advantage is they dominate their home state. The state of Louisiana doesn't put out a tremendous amount of top-end talent like Florida or Texas or California does. But what it does put out, LSU tends to control. I mean, this year I've seen Florida State being able to go in there and pull out, I think it was 3 kids. And that was it's a very rare occurrence when you can do that. So hats off to Les Miles, because if LSU's to fire him, who is to say they continue to hold that edge over the state?
Yeah, and back to Auburn real quick. Didn't mean to jump off. I just crossed my mind. They only have 17 commits right now, and in years past they've been about full. I'm thinking Auburn could have. I mean, you know how signing day is. You never know. Bama's at 16. Georgia's at 16 recruits. Auburn at 17. Clemson at 15. There could be some fireworks going off on National Signing Day, because I think there's going to be a couple surprises out there. If Auburn plays their cards right and gets lucky, they could be in the top 5 or 6 or 7, somewhere around in there. You never know about Clemson, how much that impacted recruiting. And that's a very young team. They lost a lot on defense. But Georgia's a team, Jonathan, sitting at number 8 right now. They have 2 5-stars, 9 4-stars. To me, Georgia should be number 1 in recruiting every year, if you want to know the honest truth about it. This state is stacked with talent, man. I mean, it's Florida. It really is. Georgia's loaded. And the fact that they're not number 1, 2, or 3 every year shows that they're letting people get out of their state, Jonathan. You can't take everybody, but if you're Georgia, you got to take the best. How do you think Kirby Smart's going to close out his first National Signing Day? I think he may make a little noise, honestly. I think he may do good. But Georgia with 16 right there with a lot of room.
I think Georgia's going to make a push, and what Kirby Smart has going for him is that West Georgia is really considered Alabama and Auburn territory. I mean, you know, West Georgia is considered Alabama-Auburn. That's part of their recruiting state. The state of Alabama might as well annex that. All right, make it part of their own, okay? Kirby knows that area pretty well. He's got great relationships over there. So he can go in there and get some of the talent that Georgia hasn't been able to get before. Now, you know, the battle he's got to fight is, let's face it, Northern Georgia is really Tennessee territory, Southern Georgia is Florida and Florida State, and right along the coast is South Carolina and Clemson. So he's got to win the battle in Atlanta. All right, he's got to kick Alabama and Auburn out of his state, which he should be able to do now. And then he's got to try and muscle out Clemson and South Carolina. You're never going to be able to muscle out Florida State just because Florida State got their hold in too early and Florida keeps beating them. But, you know, that's what they have to try and do is just get their edges back, and then they can start working their way north and south. I think it can be done. I have faith in Kirby Smart because he's learned how to recruit for one of the best.
Yeah, and in Florida, number 6 right now, there were 26 commits. It looks like they're about full. No 5-stars, 9 4-stars, and 17 3-stars. And I'm not trying to bash Florida right now. I'm not trying to bash them. But you would think with Jim McElwain with 26 commitments, some, at least two of those, three of those would be five stars, especially when he's from the state of Florida, Johnson. I mean, Florida, there's no reason. If you look at Florida State, they've got a five-star. Heck, Ole Miss has three. Why can't Florida get a five-star to commit? That's the first time I remember in a long time.
Well, because Florida State's dominating the top-end talent in the state. That's a fact. I mean, that's a fact. Florida State is dominating recruiting in the state of Florida. You know, and if you want to disagree with that, Florida fans, go ahead. Get from.
Call in.
Make that phone call. Call in. I dare you. I'd like for you to argue that because you can't. I mean, we're seeing this right now, and the word is right now that one of Florida's four stars is about to flip to Florida State. We don't know which one it is, and, you know, it's just a rumor, but apparently there's four of them that are talking about it. One of them's going to do it tomorrow. So Florida, they need to figure out what it takes to get the stronghold back in recruiting. I don't know if they can ever get it back because apparently Jimbo and Brewster have just taken – I mean, we own Miami – you know, we own South Florida. Everything south of, let's say, St. Petersburg, we own. Everything north of Ocala, we essentially own now. So, oddly enough, Florida State is just fighting to be able to recruit my home area of the state, which I find kind of depressing.
Are you concerned with Mark Richt to Miami maybe coming in there and stealing some of those recruits?
No, I'm not concerned at all. Jimbo Fisher and Brewster own Miami. You know, what's going to happen is Mark's going to go up the Atlantic coast. And in all honesty, if he's smart, he's going to start in Jacksonville and work his way down. Because that's what Schnellenberger did. That's what Mark needs to do. You need to go ahead and dominate the Atlantic coast. Okay? Once you get that, leave Florida State, Florida to defend for the rest of the state. But if you get the Atlantic coast, you can dominate the state. There's a lot of talent all up and down there.
Yeah. There is, and I just think we're going to have a big shakeup. Right now, I'm not impressed with Michigan either. With 25 commits, I mean the way Jim Harbaugh's spending the night with teams and stuff. I mean, should he be in jail? Should he be a head coach? Why? Should he have a 5-star as much sleepovers as many sleepovers as he's having?
the bar that I've gotten out of Michigan is they're waiting on a kicker to commit, and that was actually the kid that the sleepover with the Penn State thing. It's that kicker. So they're kind of waiting on that kicker to commit. That, I guess, they think it's a lock, but he still has some Penn State ties. I guess he still really likes Penn State. And then probably the worst-kept secret is the number one recruit in the nation's mother loves Michigan. Rashawn Gary or Gray or whatever it is, his mother loves Michigan. It's the only school she hasn't freaked out and thrown a fit about. So the expectation is that he's going to commit to Michigan. And there's your own, you know, Harbaugh just pulled a fast one on us. Then and there.
I hope Auburn gets him. They got about a 1% chance, but you never know.
Yeah, from what I heard, it's coming down to Michigan and USC.
Hey, the bag man show up, you know what can happen. That's what I'm saying. And hey, Quinn's with us. Welcome to the show, Quinn. I'm your host, Barry. All right, who said that on the movie Tombstone?
All right, let's talk some sports.
Who's running this show here, Jonathan? I mean, I'll talk comedies, I'll talk violence, I'll talk anything on this radio show, Quinn. Grow up and go watch some movies.
Quinn, we really can't be friends.
That's a part of the movie, too, so you'll have to watch that. Quinn, what do you think about Alabama telling this kid a couple days before signing day, immigration, they're trying to get the livestock right in. I mean, how does the season keep getting with this man? Killing these kids right there for signing day. It needs to be done. But it's not just there's ways to protect some of these investments. It's bad for a year to come to Tulsa and now he's told you don't have to grace you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't quite understand that, expecting kids to gray shirt like that. I personally don't think it's right, but, you know, I guess you got to do what you have to do.
Well, Jonathan, I don't think it's a class move, because it just says you have one of nine and that's you. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, Saban should say, you know what, with the kid, we have a scholarship, we're going to cover that. Three five-star that wants to come in late, we're out of spots right now. I mean, shouldn't Saban do that? If he really cared about the players, don't you think he would do that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think there is a big problem across the nation with this whole gray-shirting thing in Alabama. It does come off as kind of a used car salesman, a little sleazy, especially because he's kind of sprinkling on the kids late enough to where they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, do you stay committed to Alabama, or do you decommit, and then who else got a spot for you? Luckily, because you're committed to Alabama, other teams will have a spot waiting for you. That's the good thing. About, you know, being committed to a school like Alabama, Florida State, or Auburn, and Georgia, you know, other schools will take you. But I'm not a fan of the gray shirting thing. It bothers me. It really does, because you promised this kid for over a year that, you know, he's going to have a scholarship, and now you're going, hey, well, here's the deal, son. Not a fan.
No, me neither. It's just the word doesn't mean anything. It's like your interview, you accept a dollar from a client you signed up for. You're starting working 2 weeks. All of a sudden, you turn into this and a week later, they can say, we're not going to – we found somebody a little better than you. We're not going to use you. All of a sudden, you're out of a job. You know, your word doesn't mean anything. A signature doesn't. And I just think that be a time in football kids like that, you know, if you've been committed the year before the signing deadline or so, you should be able to sign a document that says I'm going to Alabama, and that's all. For those kids to know where there's no doubt to be able to sign, and they should have to honor the scholarship. And here's the deal, Alabama, if you didn't want the kid, don't offer it. And don't accept his commitment that early. If that's what you're wanting to do, I just think it's sorry, especially 2 days, 3 days before signing day. It's different if it was 3 or 4 months. Give him a chance to go visit Auburn. Give him a chance to go visit Minnesota, Wisconsin, wherever. But don't make him be committed to you for a year and do this to him. But here's the deal: it's going to be okay because Nick Saban's doing it. It's okay because King Saban. He does. I mean, just like the steroids, just like the payment of players. I mean, all this stuff nobody talks about. But one day, Quinn, one day you're going to hear it. You're going to hear about everything I've been saying for the last few years. And Nick Saban, it's going to come crashing down one day. I don't know when, but he's the same person that got this Ole Miss crap started again. Alabama's behind us. I bet you $100 right now. Bama's behind us because this is racking up some 5-stars, and they beat Alabama 2 years ago. So now all of a sudden Ole Miss is cheating. We all knew that, but why Jonathan, why is the former recruiting we hear about Ole Miss now?
It's interesting. I mean, I don't know if it was the NCAA dragging their feet like they're so good at, or if it was a little bit of late whistleblowing. I mean, it's definitely a interesting situation. No matter what, there's you know, the NCAA – always seems to have great timing. I mean, I remember when the Jameis Winston thing kind of became public. It happened right after the ACC, or right before the ACC championship game. Well, if that isn't perfect timing, you have this situation where it's a week before signing day. Oh, no, the timing's not suspicious at all on this. So, you know, it's something that happens time and time again. Now, I just want to go back to Alabama really quick. Michigan did the same thing essentially Alabama did, where they told a kid scholarship, but I guess he'd been given the heads up a couple months in advance that it could happen. Okay, so they told him to go to
Tennessee.
Right. And they were bashed mercilessly. I mean, every fan base attacked them. How come they're not doing the same thing to Saban? I have not seen the public outrage with Saban grace hurting like I have with other teams who just pull a scholarship.
Yeah. I'm just sick of stories coming out like this. And really what it got me was Camden, when Auburn was real good and Cam Newton, that came out that all this crap happened when they had all this information before the season started. They had when Auburn was 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, 8-0. And then when he was running away with the Heisman Trophy and possible national championship, well, hold on a minute. Let me pull this out of my back pocket. Well, the SEC is going to turn into the Southwest Conference, guys. It's going to be everybody's going to have a gun out, and they're going to start firing at each other, and all of us are going to be dead because, everybody knows where the bodies are buried, guys. They know. And trust me when I say that. Every school out there does some dirty things when it comes to recruiting. Notre Dame, Auburn, Florida State, everybody does some not cheating, I would say, but, you know, pushing the envelope, I'd say, or doing something that's not ethical. And, Jonathan, you know that happens. I mean, you're a Florida State guy. Do you think Florida State ever paid player? Do you think that ever happened?
No.
What do you want me to say, Brian? I think there have been instances of it, of course. You can't always, and SMU found this out, and I think every school at some point does. You can't always control your boosters, and you can't always control your fan base. Let's just be honest for a second. And do I think things like that have happened? Of course I do. Do I think there have been coaches who have slipped the kid a couple $100 now and then just because the kid needs it? Yeah, of course. You know, we've heard stories about that where schools get put in probation because the coach gave the kid $200, so he can go home and see his mom or whatever it was. So you can get diapers and food for the kid. I mean, we've seen this before. We've heard this story. And everything's a rule violation. And that's why I think the NCAA, there's pros and cons to trying to keep the amateurism, but I think this is a conversation for another day.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm going to go back to this. If Auburn paid Cam Newton $180,000, congratulations, because it was worth every penny, baby, what he's brought to you and what he's still bringing to you. So you need to pay him $180,000 every year for the rest of his life because that was the best investment you ever made, Jay Jacobs, getting those guys in there and paying him. But this Pro Bowl is pretty good. Russell Wilson starts out with a bomb down the field, man. He's got a long-term contract in. Eli drove down for a touchdown. The defense is looking really good in the Pro Bowl right now. And I'm going to tell you what's going to happen, Jonathan. When Jameis Winston comes in, that's when the defense is going to start playing the hardest. You watch and see. I just want to get off that just 1 second. You watch.
I don't watch the Pro Bowl. I'm watching the NHL All-Star Game. It's much more fun.
And hockey. I can't watch hockey. I'm sorry. I can't do it.
It's
too
okay.
Cold. Too violent for me. It's too violent for me.
Oh, come on!
Too violent.
I wouldn't say it's any worse than football. And if you watch UFC or stuff, it's not any worse than that either.
I know, I'm joking, Quinn. I'm just not a hockey guy. Jonathan tried to get me into hockey. I just couldn't get into it.
Oh,
I'm sorry,
know.
Guys.
A great sport.
One day.
When football's not around, man. It really is.
Maybe I need to start watching. Maybe I'll try to do that. The Super Bowl's coming up, guys, but we're going to come back to signing day. We're going to come back to that. But
yeah,
I
wanted to comment on Alabama.
Go ahead, Quinn.
I actually think with this gray shirting, since it happened a couple of years ago, I think it could actually start hurting Alabama a little bit in getting these top recruits. Because if they start thinking, well, this could happen to me, they may be hesitant to commit to Alabama.
Well, Quinn, a top recruit's not going to be great. That's the only thing. I mean, the gray shirts are these three-star people that typically you may think they're good. Maybe I'm wrong about that. You don't remember the top 10 groups of the country worrying about being gray shirted, do you? They're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And, you know, you're right about that. And at the same time, I do think Alabama is seeing some effects of this, though. You know, we've seen kids transfer out when they – and we've also seen, especially with the running backs, you remember a couple of years back when they signed about four in the class, the Derrick Henry class. And I want to say two or three of those kids wound up transferring out. So I think there's definitely Alabama starting to see some effects of how, you know, they've mass recruited just the top players all the way around. They're starting to see some of the negative effects of that. But it's still, they're still going to be able to pull the top kid essentially from every position. And that's just the one thing with Alabama, that it's not going to end until Nick Saban's gone in all reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, all things that go up is going to come down. And I think Clemson is a team that kind of showed that. You look at Alabama with all those years of number one recruiting classes, with everything they've done to Quinn. They dominated recruiting, but yet they barely beat Clemson. Clemson's been – they're like a Auburn. They're about a top 10 recruiting class to do it consistently. They get a quarterback in, all of a sudden they're ready for a championship. It took everything Alabama had to win that championship. So you have to have the number one recruiting class anymore to win a championship. I think Auburn, teams like that, Florida State, you're just one quarterback away. That's what you need. You're one quarterback away from winning a championship. And I don't know. I just think recruiting's changing a little bit. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But I just think Clemson showed it, John. You can lose your offensive line. You rebuild it. You can have a pretty good defense. If you have a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, it can stretch the field, move it with your legs. I mean, dang. I mean, even Alabama, think about that. That was the best defense in college football this year. They got 40 put up on them. The year before, I put up 40-plus, 650 yards on them. I mean, how important is defense these days in college football? I just think it's shifted a lot. Where you can have a great defense, but you can still get 40 put on you.
I think week to week you have to have a halfway decent defense because eventually week to week, if you have to put up 40 points every week to win, it's going to put pressure on your offense, and I don't care how great your quarterback is, it could start to. So you have to have at least a halfway decent defense.
Oregon.
Good point. Yeah,
I mean, that's why Oregon, that's why Baylor, that's why TCU, they haven't won championships. Their defenses are all subpar. That's why Oklahoma has struggled to win a championship. You know, it's all been all about defense. In all honesty, you need a defense. You know, Florida State, the year they won, that was a very good defense. Auburn, the year they won, very good defense. I mean, yeah, do they have transcendent quarterbacks? Of course, and you need one. I mean, the Jake Coker winning a championship, it's almost an anomaly, and at the same time, Jake Coker was a pretty good quarterback. Because let's not forget, you know, him and Jameis were in competition. So, you know, I think honestly, though, defense, you know, and the NFL proved it once again this year. Defense wins championships, man. At the end of the day, it's all about defenses.
Yeah, I think I see Trey in the queue. Trey, when you're ready to come in, press number one, my friend. We'll grab you in, and there he is. One of the co-hosts now, Trey Patterson. Trey, how you doing, buddy? Good to hear from you.
Hey, what's up, dude?
Welcome back, man.
You know, you got to return every now and again, let the people know what's going on.
I know. What's going on, man? I have two Florida State people on this panel right here. I feel a little uncomfortable.
Well, you know, got to balance it out sometimes, right?
Tell me about what you think. Welcome back. First of all, welcome back. Thanks for joining. I asked Trey to come in and say hello to everybody. I mean, hopefully joining us. Alabama in this gray shirt thing, Trey. Is that a big deal? I know we talk about it about every year, but when's that going to be enough? And when does it start honoring commitments? And for especially those long-term commitments where kids have been staying with you for a year, and then all of a sudden 3 days before signing day, you tell them, hey, we're going to graduate you because we have somebody better we're going to bring in.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon for the big guys to do that. So Harbaugh did it, or has started doing it. Saban's done it for years with the gray shirts. You know, LSU has done it for a while. Some coaches just do that practice, and you know, it works out just fine for them. And other coaches, you know, I don't think you get away with it. It's interesting because for the first time, really, Jimbo Fisher is going to be put more than likely, or maybe I should say, in a similar type of position because they don't have a lot of roster spots remaining, and they have about five or six guys who are legitimately on the board still. They don't have five or six spots. They may have four, maybe five, but then you're talking about gray shirts, then you're talking about releasing guys off the roster from this, you know, those juniors and seniors who aren't playing, about not giving them their scholarships anymore. So it is something that some recruits watch. I think it's those three stars who are probably a little bit more worried and low four stars. But, you know, in today's you know, recruiting, Tarvin, and, you know, where coaches who win 9 and 10 games get fired, I think the pressure's on. And you know, I'll give a little bit of a plug to Mike Farrell off Rivals, who came up with a really good idea, I thought, and tweeted it out from our Weigh-In Sports Talk that talked about, you know, when a kid could sign and when a coach makes a decision to leave, then it gives a kid a month or two to release, you know, and basically made it binding. So if you offer a kid his freshman year of high school, and you have three ways to offer it. You can say, hey, we're interested, or if you offer him a scholarship, it's binding at that point. I think that would stop a lot of this early recruiting where you have guys committed for 2 years and then all of a sudden you realize, well, maybe they're not the five-star we thought. Maybe they're a three-star, so it's time to move on.
Yeah, that's a good point. Recruiting is a dirty game, but tell me some surprises you think maybe on signing day. What team out there? How do you think Auburn's going to do? They have a lot of commitments out there, you know, possibilities out there. I think they have 16 or 17 commitments. How do you think Gus Malzahn finishes up with a season that was not good on the field, losing Muschamp, losing some coaches? Right now they're about number 11. Where do you think they end up?
Well, I think Auburn will close pretty well. I mean, I think if you're an Auburn fan, I wouldn't expect a huge run. I think they're gonna grab one or two players that are gonna be big. They're not gonna make the five player push like we're gonna see Alabama do for sure. I mean, Alabama's gonna close ridiculous. They may get three 5 stars. I mean, that's just unheard of.
Oh, that's definite.
Yeah, I mean, and the other team that's really big on watching, Texas could close really strong, but it's not really lining up right now. We'll see if they get this linebacker that they're battling with Florida State for. I think they will, is my prediction. I think they'll move up. If you're talking about a top 25 class for them, we're not talking about top 5, top 10. I think Auburn could push into the top 10. I would expect they're going to be right on the bubble. I think Florida State, depending on what Jimbo does and how many of these kids are in play, are going to be a number 2-1-ish, but Bama's going to really make a push to get that number 1 again. So I'd watch for a lot of fun on Tuscaloosa. Probably Tallahassee, maybe Texas as well. So we'll see.
Well, the pockets are deep in Tuscaloosa, man. So those boosters, they love their football there. So I know they're going to be closing strong. I think Saban's bored. He needs to have some fun with people on signing day. Well, Trey, you know, we're about to get in the Super Bowl. What do you think about the matchup we have here? Cam Newton and the Panthers against the Sheriff and the Broncos. Is this a good game in your mind, or is this something that's just going to be a blowout, kind of like the Seattle-Denver game a few years back?
You know, I kind of like this matchup. You know, I'm not a fan nor – sorry, my daughter's up loud. I'm not a fan nor am I a hater of either team. I actually kind of root for – a good game, and I'd be happy for both. I think the storyline for Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers, I mean, they're possibly the best team all year, so if they win, it's deserved, and you think, wow, what a great run. You know, Cam Newton is a fun player to watch. That defense for Carolina is ridiculous. I mean, who doesn't like Luke Kuechly? At the same point, I mean, you know, Peyton Manning, last game ever. Tarvin wouldn't – I mean, I know you're a Cam Newton fan, but does anybody really hate the storyline of – watching Peyton Manning win and then punch just like John Elway did as a Bronco. So, I mean, I think great storylines, you know, hopefully it's a good game.
How about the HGH, though, with Peyton Manning? Where does that fall in if they do win? And then comes out that he used HGH, how's that going to tarnish his legacy?
Oh, well, I mean, I think it would. Yeah, I think it would. Hold on a second.
Ask Ray Lewis.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, it's that's what, and I just wonder who put that out. And look, where there's smoke, there is fire. There's some truth to that. Do I think Peyton Manning used HGH? Probably. I mean, did he do it to cheat? No. I mean, I don't even think it was illegal when he did use it. I just think he's trying to heal up to try to be able to get back on the field. You look at Peyton Manning, he's not a muscular guy, Jonathan. He's not the Incredible Hulk. He's not having a career year. I think he did it because he's old and he needed to heal. And I just don't think it's cheating when you do it that way.
And you know what I learned? According to the USADA, pretty much in every supplement that we take as people, if you want to take like a supplement or anything, there's probably something in that product that is USADA banned. I just thought I'd say that and how ridiculous that is.
No, it's extremely ridiculous. My whole point with Peyton Manning, and I'm basing this off, I believe this is Peyton Manning's last game. We have witnessed a fantastic career. For him to make it to the Super Bowl is outstanding and, first out Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. But Ray Lewis had that stink right before his Super Bowl in 2011 with the deer antler spray. It was the same thing that Alabama got attention for when they played LSU for the title. So I just think hasn't followed Ray's up. And I don't think it's going to follow Peyton. I think at the end of the day, people are going to look at it and just go, forget about it. Who cares? He's out of the league. He was one of the best to play. And it is what it is. It's just kind of, it's the same way that happened with Ray Lewis. Nobody still talks about Ray Lewis as a deer antler spray. When you think of Ray Lewis, you don't think of that at all. So I don't think I don't think it's going to tarnish. I don't think it's going to follow Peyton's legacy.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think Peyton Manning can win this game. I'll be honest, HGH or no HGH or anything, I don't think he cheated, but Vegas is trying to tell us something, Trey. I mean, the line is about 6 right now. That's mm-hmm. that's what Carolina's favored. I really think it – I don't know. I just – from what I can see, I can't see Denver scoring on Carolina. I can't see them extending that field and making the defense work for Carolina. I think they're just going to pin their ears back and come to stop the run and the pass at the same time. I can't see Denver scoring touchdowns. I can see them kicking field goals, but I just can't see them scoring.
Yeah. Tarvin, what's interesting about Peyton Manning and, what's going to be his legacy, Jonathan brought up some good points. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Ray Lewis's number one problem in his career wasn't deer antler spray. It was kind of like, blood all over his clothes.
Murder.
Yeah. he's still on ESPN, so, that should tell you something. What's interesting about Peyton Manning and, the HGH stuff is maybe a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but Tarvin, I've heard of a lot of straight football fans who all of a sudden believed in Al Jazeera report, which is not a bad network. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
now going bankrupt.
Well, yeah, I mean, at least in America they are. Yeah, they're an American affiliate. So, I mean, what's interesting about that is who created the report. It hasn't really been verified by a lot of other people. It has led to a lot of investigation. So, I mean, eventually it will come out, whether there's any validity to this. I mean, I think MLB is running a big investigation. So, if they come out in 8 months from now and they have really clear evidence, will it tarnish his legacy? Probably. I mean, but if it's one of those things that comes out and we never really get proved and it just kind of sits there and lingers, nobody's going to remember it. I mean, he'll be up either commentating or coaching and we'll all get past it.
Well, I want to see Peyton Manning in well. I want to see him, score on one of the last drives to put Denver up on top, and I'd like to see Cam Newton bring him back down and win. That way it wasn't Peyton Manning's fault. He did his job, but the Denver defense lets them down, but Trey, I know you haven't been a big Cam Newton fan when he came into the NFL. I know you didn't think he would be at this level. Is it surprising you the way Cam Newton's performing this year, or what?
Yeah, I've been impressed with, you know, I've never been a huge fan of his. I actually kind of, I like watching him. I think a lot of the, what I've heard is criticisms is kind of ridiculous. I mean, people who want to criticize him for dancing in the end zone, I'm like, really? You know, that's, yeah, I just find that to be just quite honestly just a really bad argument. He's really cleaned up his act off the field. He does a lot of stuff in Carolina with kids and a lot of charity organizations. That's what you ask. I mean, that's what you want of a guy like him. I mean, I don't know what else you could ask of him. He's matured quite a bit on the field, which was kind of always my problem in the NFL. You and I talked about it on previous shows, Tarvin, where he kind of acts like, you know, acted like a baby when other players did something or, you know, interceptions. But you've really seen him grow up. He's a leader of that team. He's a leader off the field. I mean, I don't know what else you could ask for a guy, especially in this position. So, I mean, he wins it, and I'm going to give him an applause, and, you know, I'll be happy for him because he's really, really progressing to a great quarterback.
Yeah, we go from Cam Newton and we go to Johnny Manziel, Trey, a guy that can't seem to stay out of trouble or out of the news, and here he is now. The cops called, you know, helicopters are looking for Johnny Manziel after another dispute with a woman. I mean, when is this kid going to grow up? I think never. That's my honest opinion. I think he's spoiled as a kid, and daddy's money has spoiled him. So give me your thoughts on Johnny.
Well, I mean, as bad as it is to say, because he was actually decently effective this year for Cleveland. I mean, every 2 years they're losing a coach. The organization is completely in disarray. They can't seem to draft anybody. They really are at a position where if they don't cut him, Tarvin, you're right, Manziel's never going to get better. It seems like what Manziel probably needs in his life is to be cut from the NFL instead, you know, and make someone – sort of interview him for a second chance, because I just don't see any progression from him and understanding, you know, when you're in the NFL and you have the extra scrutiny, you know, again, nothing huge on his part. I mean, he hasn't, you know, no crimes or anything, but at the same point, he's always in the news negatively. And for a franchise like Cleveland that is just, you know, a negatively sort of publicized team, they really need something else. And you got to wonder, especially with this quarterback's draft, Tarvin, this is setting up like another 3-year disaster run for Cleveland, because they overreach again on a quarterback, a Paxton Lynch or a Jeff Goff, you know, this kid out of North Dakota State. I mean, they're going to reach for some kid who's not first round grade. The quarterbacks this year are not anywhere near where they were last year, where you had Winston and Mariota, who people actually thought come in the league. And these guys aren't like that. These guys are guys who are developmental. I mean, they may be good if they bench. I mean, so if you go into Cleveland and you draft one of those guys, man, you're talking about another 2 to 3 year setback. So Cleveland really needed Johnny Manziel to do well, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
You know what Cleveland should do? They should, you know, listen to Gus Malzahn. At least he knows, you know, which quarterbacks can play in the NFL. They need to go to Jacksonville, get Nick Marshall, let him run the quarterback and just say, do it. Whatever you want to do, just do it. I mean, Cleveland's terrible. I mean, who are they? This Lynch guy, Jonathan. I mean, Auburn shut him down. And let's face it, Auburn doesn't have a great defense. I mean, they shut him down. They made him look like a JUCO quarterback. That's really what they made him look like. I mean, what's Cleveland going to do now? I mean, they drafted Johnny Manziel, which was stupid. And now where do they go?
Well, it all depends on how the draft shakes up. I mean, you have Jared Goff out of Cal, who I think is a talented quarterback. There's no doubt about that.
Is he a starter in the NFL next year?
I don't know. From what I've seen from him, I think he's actually pretty dang good. I think there's a chance he could come in and be somebody for a team that, you know, you're looking for. It's just, The thing with Paxton Lynch is people are falling in love with him because he has the size and the athleticism and he has the arm. I don't know what he's got in his, you know, in between the noggin, and not for nothing, you know, I think Paxton Lynch is a Blake Bortles situation. Well, Blake Bortles played extremely well this year, you know, but I think if you bring in Paxton Lynch and you think he's going to start right away and he's going to deliver something to your franchise, you're mistaken. I think Paxton Lynch is going to need at least a year or two to grow. Jared Goff, I think, is going to need another year to grow. You know, Carson Wentz from North Dakota State, I've heard a lot of good things about him. I know the Cowboys like him. My thing with him is, you know, he ended his collegiate career on the sideline due to injury. So, you know, we got to see how he's coming back from that and everything. And then you have Connor Cook out of Michigan State, who,
oh God,
not for nothing, but I'm not a huge fan of his. I never
he
really
sucks.
Have been. And there's a lot of teams that are in love with Connor Cook. So it's going to be interesting to see how that progresses. It
you
almost feels like he's
going
to collect.
You forgot about Hackenberg.
Hackenberg's not a first-round pick. There's no need mentioning him. He's not a first-round pick. Christian Hackenberg is going to be a third- or fourth-round pick, and he's going to be developmental. He's going to be developed. He's a developmental prospect. I think Houston – of all, if anybody reaches for him before the third round, it's going to be Houston, because Bill O'Brien's already worked with him. He knows what he's going to have.
Yeah.
I don't think Hackenberg's in any sort of a conversation.
Would I be a fool saying that he'll end up the best out of all of them in the NFL?
No.
I think Hackenberg has a lot of talent. I think Hackenberg's a good quarterback who is on one of the worst offensive teams I've seen. You know, we all got to remember, Hackenberg as a freshman was pretty dang good. I mean, Hackenberg was really good as a freshman with Bill O'Brien's system. And that's also the same team that had guys like Donovan Smith as part of the offensive line. Donovan Smith did a pretty good job of starting left tackle with Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year. So we saw the issues in the Georgia game specifically where he got knocked out. The offensive line looked very shaky. So I think Hackenberg might be the best prospect of all of them. I think we could see somebody else who could be a good prospect. Somebody like Carson Wentz, who, as long as he's not drafted to the team of a franchise, could be good.
All these quarterbacks you guys have mentioned, the one thing they haven't really had is a big stage to play on. We really don't know much about them, Trey. I mean, with Winston and Mariota, all of them, we saw the biggest stages there been in college football. They played on them. They've won. Winston won a championship. Winston won a Heisman. Mariota played in the Final Four. But this Hackenberg guy, I think he is the best one. But this Goff and the Lynch, all these guys that play for these crappy teams, what have they done? And what have they done to make you think that they could play in the NFL? I mean, I haven't seen them play anybody.
Well, I mean, you got to think about the situation in Cleveland and some of these teams that are far better suited to take a quarterback and develop them. I really don't think any of these guys. I agree that Jonathan Goff is the closest. And I watched some of Wentz at the Senior Bowl this week. You know, again, a lot of hype, right? Senior Bowl hype, that's great. There's not a lot of players in the Senior Bowl quarterback position to hype up, so sure. But I'm telling you, I don't think any of these guys can come in day one NFL right now and really move a team towards the playoff. I mean, I don't even agree with the Bortles is a good representation, because Bortles sort of was a, you know, big gunslinger kind of guy, like sort of like Roethlisberger. I don't see any guys in that mold. I think Goff is close. If you gave him maybe, you know, 10 games to watch, maybe at the end of the first year he can come in and be productive. But, you know, I just look at this. I mean, Bortles was tremendous this year, but it took him a full year last year of really being pretty stinky to be a quality quarterback this year. And Jacksonville was ready to give him that. I don't think Cleveland and some of these teams are ready to actually just tank a year and wait.
Well, Trey, I'm going to tell you something funny. And look, you know, I like Auburn. You know that. Everybody knows that. But do you think Jeremy Johnson – out of these quarterbacks, just say in the future, say we look down the road 10 years, will Jeremy Johnson of Auburn have more success in the NFL than these guys we've been talking about tonight, Trey?
Wow, Jeremy Johnson, who may or might not even be a starter in college football next year, right?
Yeah. I don't think here's the deal. It's Gus's fault. No, I'm talking about, I think Jeremy Johnson in a pro-style offense would be pretty good. He lost all of his confidence. That's the honest truth. I think it's Gus's fault. I think a lot of things happened, but I think Jeremy Johnson's better than what he played this year and what he's going to be next year. I think once he gets to the NFL level and deals with somebody that actually knows about the quarterback position, how to develop a kid, I think Jeremy Johnson's going to be a stud. And I thought Nick Marshall would be a pretty good quarterback in the NFL if somebody would give him a chance. But Jeremy's got all the tools, Trey. I mean, his size, his arm strength. He just hadn't done it on the big stage yet, really. But I think he's better than all these guys we talked about today. I really do.
Yeah, I don't think so, because the big thing that Jeremy Johnson has done and what will prevent him from even being drafted unless he changes significantly is his be able to read defenses and make smart decisions. Because a lot of guys...
He's smart.
Well,
you saw those throws right to the other team, man. He was dead on.
I know a lot of people thought he was pretty good. Now they're all defensive coordinators. But I will say that there's something to be said about Gus Malzahn and not developing quarterbacks. Everybody gave him a lot of credit for it. They said, oh, he developed Nick Marshall, who was defensive back. Well, that offense he was running wasn't very complex for throws. Yet you do have Jeremy Johnson, who was a pro-style quarterback coming out of high school. People thought that he was like an option guy, and he wasn't. It is kind of interesting point that could Jeremy Johnson be developed in a better system? Maybe, I don't know.
If I was Jeremy, I'd come out this year since the quarterback pool stuck so bad and just say, you know what, I'm starting over. I'm going to the NFL. Somebody's going to pick him up just because of the size, Jonathan, and let him come and make the team. Jeremy Johnson's going to be a quarterback in the NFL one day. Will he be great? No, but he's going to be okay. He'll be better than Johnny Manziel ever thought about being.
Okay.
Yeah, In the NFL.
Johnny needs help. Johnny needs help. That's what Johnny needs. Johnny needs to go out of the league for a year or two, go get all the help he needs, get positive influences in his life, and then come back. That's what Johnny needs.
Nah, Johnny needs
about 4 inches,
stay
too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just talking about 6'6", guys. You're a 6'6" quarterback with the size of Jeremy Johnson. He's got a very powerful arm. He can't run. He doesn't like to get hit. He does struggle with reading defenses, like Trey said. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, I get it. But that's been I don't know.
He's Jonathan Crofton, the kid out of Tennessee who was never really good. But, he has all the physical tools. He should be an NFL quarterback, but his favorite receiver was always wearing the other jersey. That's all he is. He's Jonathan Crofton. Jonathan Crofton lasted one training camp with the Chargers and was never heard from ever again.
Well, Trey, what about Jacob Coker? I mean, you're a Florida State guy. He played there. Do you think he has a shot to make a squad?
Coker has a shot. Lane Kiffin's development of him has really set him up for a possibility of being drafted and developing. I'll tell you this, Tarvin, the kid who actually – I mean, you talk about Jeremy Johnson, who has just as good a shot. I mean, he's what, Jeremy Johnson kind of clone? What about Cardale Jones? I mean, he's coming out this year. He'll get drafted at some point. Size, speed, but, reading defense is his problem.
I would take him because, you know what? I mean, you got to take – everybody wants that next quarterback. You look at everything in the NFL right now is all about the quarterback, everything. You look at New England success, Brady, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, all these quarterbacks. You got to take a chance on them. Why not? I mean – could Jones
he'll
be a good quarterback? I don't know.
He'll be drafted by somebody that can actually afford the time to develop him. Somebody like a Pittsburgh, where Ben's 34, 35. Somebody like the Giants, the Cardinals with Carson, who's up there in age. I believe he's 36. Somebody who can actually spend the time to develop him and let him grow on the bench. We'll draft Cardale Jones.
So I'm sorry if I missed this guy. So he is coming out, Trey, for sure. He did declare.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. He announced on Twitter before the final game that he was coming out.
I remember that. I remember that now. I'm sorry. My brain went blank on me there. But
yeah, he announced when they lost to Michigan State.
Crybaby. I wouldn't even draft you for that. But Trey, we were talking earlier about, I don't think you were on, when I was talking about, look at what Alabama's done throughout the recruiting, you know, back to recruiting real quick, because I forgot to ask you this when you came back on. They've dominated recruiting over the last, what, 7, 8 years, whatever it's been. But look how close Clemson was to beating them. Look how close, you know, I mean, it's just, it goes to show you that the quarterback position, if somebody, a top 10 team, Jonathan mentioned like Auburn, how consistent they are, Clemson teams, you're not finishing number one, but you're number 10 every year or something. You find a quarterback, you can win a championship. It took out everything Alabama had to win that game against Clemson. I mean, when is Alabama's run going to be over, man? That's what I want to know from you. When are we going to quit talking about Alabama being the top team in the country?
Well, I mean, without talking about them, I think, you know, probably when Nick Saban retires. I mean, Nick Saban is one of the greatest recruiters and best college coaches to have ever been part of the game. I mean, he has mastered, I mean, the modern-day recruiting. And he did it, you know, back in 2009, before other people were catching on. I mean, love it or hate it, the way he, you know, gray shirts players.
Writing checks.
Yeah, I mean, putting off, like, so you're a junior at Alabama. You know, you may have been a four-star player, but you can't make the depth chart. Saban will pull your scholarship. You know, does that sound cold? Sure. Do fans care? No. Because why? Nick Saban wins championships. I mean, he's mastered what you have to do today. I mean, with people like Mark Richt getting fired with 10 wins after 10 wins after 10 wins, you know, Bo Pelini, all these guys who were winning 9 and 10 games, you know, he's the standard that everyone looks up to. So, yeah, kids are going to play for him. I mean, that's why
I don't think Saban's the best coach in the country. I think Saban's the best CEO in the country. I mean, I just think he's got the model, what you do to win. I mean, I don't think he's a great, like, coach. I mean, we saw him at Michigan State. He wasn't that good. We saw him at the Dolphins. He wasn't that good. Unless he has superior talent, he doesn't win. I mean, and to me, a great coach could win with, you know, just about anybody. But I think he's got the recipe down. I don't know. Do you think Kirby Smart can take, just because he worked with Nick Saban for 8 or 9 years, do you think that's enough to say Georgia's going to be ready for a championship in the next couple of years because Kirby Smart's there?
Maybe. Well, what Kirby Smart will bring Tarvin, and I don't know if he's a good coach or not. I mean, to be honest, it's hard to say. You know, Saban has come out and said that he let Kirby Smart run the defense a couple years ago. I mean, so Kirby Smart had been basically maybe not even running the defense for most of that time. Who knows what the real percentage of play calling was. So I don't know if he's going to be a great head coach. I know that one thing, Tarvin, that he will at least have picked up the recruiting sort of tempo and mantra that Saban has. So if he, I mean, Georgia was already pulling in top 10 classes under Rick. So if he can get that, maybe top 5 a year versus top 10, then all of a sudden, as weak as the East is in the SEC, then you're in the championship game year in and year out. And then, of course, you have a shot every, you know, when you play that game. So maybe he can get over the hump, maybe not. I mean, I know that he will probably recruit pretty well, and he showed it so far. I mean, Georgia's got a lot of talent. They're going to sign on signing day 2, look for a possible bump from them. But who knows if he's a good coach or not? I don't know.
These guys that come out and they've worked under somebody and people think they're going to bring that same magic, it's just not the same. I mean, Kirby Smart, Auburn wasn't even hiring. I mean, that shows you, you know, and Auburn was desperate at that time, and they waited and they got their guy. But Kirby Smart's just, to me, he's a clone. I mean, he's not Nick Saban, and he's never going to be. Nobody's going to respect Kirby Smart like they do Nick Saban. I think Nick Saban liked Kirby Smart because Kirby Smart would hold his jock strap for him and do whatever he wanted to. Said, yes, sir, no matter what happened. Well, Lane Kiffin's not like that. Lane Kiffin's one of those guys like, screw you, Nick Saban. I mean, you could tell Kiffin was doing things Saban off, and I like that about Kiffin. He's going to be a good coach. But the Kirby Smart guys, come on. Anybody thinks he's really going to be a successful coach? Anybody on the panel?
I think he'll do all right. I don't know if he'll win a championship.
All right,
but
I'll get you fired, Quinn. All right, I'll get you fired, SEC, man.
But I think he'll get them to the SEC championship game consistently. But I don't think –
I guarantee you won't get them to the SEC championship in the next 3 years.
Next 3 years? I think in the next 3 years, yeah.
So we're going to bet $1,000 on the air.
Oh, I'm not betting $1,000.
I'm joking. Hey, Trey, I've got to tell you right now, Quinn's never watched the movie Tombstone, man. What do you think about that? Thoughts?
Dude, Quinn, I got to go here because I got kids who are getting up right now. But, Quinn, dude, like that's not cool, man. That's not copacetic. You got to go out. You got to watch Tombstone. and just it's what you got to do, Quinn. Thank you.
Well, Trey, buddy, thanks for joining us. I know you got some duties, but call in. We'll have Trey back on regular with me and Jonathan and Quinn before long. Trey, take care, buddy. We'll have a show Wednesday night to talk about all this recruiting. But Quinn, I'm going to play a clip right here, and I need you to tell me what movie it comes from.
I'm your huckleberry.
Tombstone.
Yay, he got it, Jonathan. Yeah.
I think we've only said that 1,000 times, so hopefully he's going to get it right
Who's
sooner
this?
Or later.
Who's this, Quinn? Who's this, Quinn? Hold on.
You tell him I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Is it that Western movie you were telling me about? I forget the name.
It's,
that's a good one, Quinn.
Who's that actor, Brian?
Kurt Russell, maybe.
You
know,
what about this one?
If I thought you were my friend, I just don't think I could bear it.
So you just watch the movie, Quinn. You'll pick up on some of these little things we talk about right here. Last one. Oh, hold on, Quinn. I'm gonna play this clip for you, Quinn. If you can tell me what movie this comes from, we'll let you host the show Wednesday night, okay? You ready?
Grab a dog,
yeah.
And I took him, and I kicked the shit out of him. And I all day long, I put up a dog's ass. Just bang, bang, bang up his ass. That's my pleasure.
Quinn, what movie
I have
was that?
No clue.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, God. Jonathan, what movie was that?
Jonathan's not throwing his hat in that ring because I didn't recognize that quote.
Oh, my gosh. All right, Jonathan, this is yours first. Quinn second. Last
I believe
one.
In the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days.
Jonathan.
Oh, that's Bull Durham. Come on now. Yeah, give me a hot, I mean,
Quinn.
That's not even a hot one.
I should have started with Quinn on that one. Quinn, do you honestly recognize that one?
No.
What?
Oh, my God. Have you ever
that
seen that
movie?
That
is the greatest baseball movie of all time.
Yes, it is. I have to. Major League's right there close, but yes. Quinn, have you ever seen that?
What movie was it?
Bull Durham.
No.
Oh.
Jesus.
Did you
Quinn,
play baseball
I'm
going
to fly you to Atlanta. No, he didn't. He probably doesn't dip skull either.
I've dipped before, and I hate it. The first time I did it, I threw up. And then every time that I've done it since, I've gotten freaking dizzy. I hate it. It's
so does everybody, Quinn.
Except for this guy.
You know what? I'll tell you this, Quinn. So did I, but I was dumb enough to keep doing it. You were smart, so congratulations. All right,
thanks.
Quinn. Last chance for you to impress me tonight. If you don't get this one, I'm just hanging up on you, and I'm calling Jason Humphreys. All right, hold on. You ready? And Jonathan, you can be second to help Quinn.
Listen, here's the thing.
you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
All right, Quinn, I'll move you to that. It was a quote that said, if you can't spot the sucker the first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker. Who the hell moved to it from?
I have no clue.
I'm going to kill you. Jonathan, what movie was that?
That's Rounders.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I haven't
even
heard
of
that movie.
Here's my problem with kids these days. Now, you're not a kid anymore, but here's the deal, guys. Put the video game down. Cry to your mama's basement. Watch a movie rated R, okay? I mean, that's all you got to do. I know, Quinn, you may not be allowed to watch anything over PG-13, but
I
you got to
adventure
out. I was watching
rated R movies at 13 years old.
I was watching porn at 13. There you go. I'm joking. I did, but it was a rated R movie. Well, you did. I was going back in the. I'm going to tell you the funniest story real quick before, and then we'll get back to the sports. I had a buddy who was 12 years old, and he'd go in. We had a VCR player. He'd go back to Take Two Video, and he'd say his daddy was crippled in a wheelchair, and he had to go back to the back room. He'd come out about six flicks of those. And they would let him rent them. That was the thing. Usually my dad's out in the car in a wheelchair, and he'd go rent like six movies, spend all weekend watching this stuff. And that's crazy. I just had to throw that out there. That was funny. You remember video stores, don't you, Quinn? Where you go rent a movie?
Yeah.
Okay, but I mean,
wow.
you don't. I can't believe that. Have you ever watched? How many movies have you watched in your life, Quinn? 2, 3, 4?
Probably over 30.
Okay. All right. Over 30. I watched 30 in the last 2 weeks.
Jeez.
All right, Quinn, this is your last chance right here, and I'm done. Everybody, I know the listeners are having fun with this because they're probably playing along. There you will. That's in the archive. If you don't get this one, you're suspended from the show for a week. Hold on. You ready?
I eat breakfast 300 yards from 4,000 Cubans who are trained to kill me, so don't think for 1 second that you can come down here, flash a badge, and make me nervous.
Who's that, Glenn? What movie was that?
He's not going to get
that. I don't
know. It's A Few Good Men. It's a phenomenal movie from early 90s.
Yeah. I Quinn, your top 20 must-see list. I'll put in my top 20. But then, I mean, we're working now. I work 80 hours a week, so you have time to watch a few movies here and there. You can watch
like
them on your iPhone. Please help you identify who you are. That's what you're looking for. You're lost right now, Quinn. You don't know who you are. You don't know who you are.
Oh, yeah.
Am I lying right?
No, I mean, at the same time, the unfortunate reality is a lot of the better movies came out before Clint and I were born. So it's hard for us to catch up. Like, I have a list of about 15 movies my uncle gave me, and he told me I have to watch them. And I'm looking at the dates they were released, and I'm sitting there going, my dad was born.
I want you to send them to me. Will you do me a favor? You can read them off now, or you can send them to me. I'd like to see if I've seen all of them.
Oh, well, I imagine you have. True Romance.
Never seen it.
The Cooler.
Seen
Carlito's
it.
Way, which, from what I understand,
seen
everybody's
it.
Seen.
Yeah.
A Bronx Tale.
Yeah.
Colors.
Yeah.
International Affairs.
Nope.
Ford Apache, the Bronx, History of Violence.
Yeah, something like Quinn over here.
No Country for Old Men.
That's the worst movie of all time. Damn, that's the worst movie of all time. I've seen, I almost shot myself in that movie during trying to watch the Quinn. That was so boring. I hated that movie. My buddy said it was the best movie he ever saw. I watched it. My wife almost shot me, really. Seriously.
Thomas Crown Affair.
Yeah.
Heist.
Yep.
Mexican. And General Daughter.
Yeah, those good movies. Mexican, that's a little racist, but, you know, it's good.
Well, I mean, one of my favorite movies of all time is Blazing Saddles, and there's no way that movie can be made today.
No. I like Django Unchained. That was pretty funny. I know a lot of people don't get the humor in some of the stuff, but it was pretty good. Have you seen that one?
Oh, yeah. Quinn, I imagine you've seen Django Unchained. That came out, like, what, 5 years ago?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. I don't go out to movies, regardless if they're new, old, whatever. I don't watch movies.
I love giving Quinn, even if I want to see a movie,
I don't end up seeing the movie.
That's kind
of what do you do with your time, Quinn? I'm trying to help you out. I'm trying to help you here. What do you do with your time?
Watch sports and hang out with friends and go to school.
Hang out with friends. These friends you hang out with, let me tell you. 10 years from now, you won't even know who they are or what they do. They're not your friends, man. Don't waste time with too many friends. Never have more than a handful of friends. Never. That's rule number one. Right, Jonathan?
I have a very small group myself.
I'm joking. But yeah, do what you want, Quinn. But make time. Take some me time, Quinn. Take some me time and watch some movies.
I do. The me time is watching sports.
What sports? Football season's over now, so there's no excuse for you now.
I have sports for me all year long.
Okay. Well, football's about over with, and March Madness is coming up. And speaking of March Madness, we got a little taste yesterday of some very good college basketball. The SEC did about what I thought they would do, Jonathan. They came out, what did they go, 3-7 against the Big 12. I found out some stuff yesterday that home court advantage is everything, of course, in basketball. We knew that going in, but the Big 12 is just a little better than the SEC. What do you think, Jonathan? Just a little bit.
Yeah, the Big 12 is just a little bit better. What I learned yesterday from watching the games, whenever my journalism professor tells me to bet against Kentucky, bet big against Kentucky. Kentucky should have won that game. There's no doubt about that. And you know, it was very interesting. We were having a conversation. He's from Kentucky, actually coached high school basketball up there, and that's why I value his opinion when it comes to that sort of stuff. And he told me, he goes, Kansas, remember the game from last year. Kansas is better right now. But what we did not factor in was Kansas done they grown up. I mean, Kentucky done they grown up. I mean, they showed a lot of heart yesterday. If they hadn't gotten in foul trouble, they win that game hands down, running away.
Thank you for recognizing that. And that's what I took away yesterday. Quinn, I don't know if you watched it, but through all the games yesterday, LSU almost beat Oklahoma. It's home court advantage. Anybody could beat anybody. But the thing I took away from yesterday, Kentucky is starting to be back again. And this is playing at the Fieldhouse. This is in Kansas. You don't win there, John. You don't go into Kansas and win. I don't care who you are. Kentucky had to beat the entire game, which tells me that Kentucky's finally starting to get it. And just say they run the table, come close to that, they get a 4 seed, 5 seed, something like that. They're going to be hell in that tournament, Jonathan, if they figure out down low. And I think Kentucky's gotten a lot better over the last few weeks. I think Kentucky's starting to get it.
I agree. I think they are starting to get it. Jamal Murray played phenomenal yesterday. Trey Miles was good. I mean, that's a good team. Kentucky's all of a sudden that talent's starting to gel. This is kind of reminiscent of that 8 seed that made the run, you know. I'm not saying I'm starting to get nervous, but I'm on the edge of my seat right now in Kentucky. It's like, do I take you guys seriously again? Dadgummit, why can't y'all just be bad for a year? Why can't we have another Kentucky NIT year? I'll take that.
But the fact that they went on the road and forced them, I mean, they played overtime with a team that's Final Four ready, Kansas. They're good. Kansas is real good. But I think, you know, we're maybe more than that a little bit. That's 2 months away, aren't we? When's March Madness? At the end of March?
A month and a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Like a month and a half.
So, I mean, that's a long time, guys. It's like Kentucky. They're starting to gel. Imagine, give them some more games, man, and let's see what happens. And that's what people don't realize about basketball. It's just get in the tournament. Kentucky doesn't need a one or a two seed. They showed it a couple years ago. Just let them get in and see what happens. And I want to go over their schedule because I just don't think people realize, like Jonathan said, that talent is starting to get it. Kentucky's not just a number 20th ranked team and, you know, an average team. They're a 20 team because they lost to Auburn, because they lost to UCLA, because they lost to Ohio State and LSU on the road. I mean, now all of a sudden, you know, they had three straight before that. They went to Arkansas and won, which is not easy. They crushed Vanderbilt, which was not easy. They beat Missouri by 34. They lost to Kansas, but now they have Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, South. They have the SEC schedule coming up. And Jonathan, I could see Kentucky running the table, finishing. What are they right now? What's their record right now? I know they've lost five, but they have one, two.
Kentucky 16-15.
Okay. No, they're not 16-15. Oh, they've only lost five games.
A liar.
Let's see. They're 16-5, you said. You said 15.
Oh, yeah, 16-5. My goodness.
16-5. Just say Kentucky finishes. Say Kentucky finishes, what, 29-5 or something. They're a two seed, probably, aren't they, Jonathan? I mean, they're going to win games in the SEC because the SEC's weak and because they're starting to gel again. So Kentucky could make a run here and get in that tournament. That talent with a point guard like Ulis starting to play inside, this talent, they shoot the bat, they can shoot the rock, they can play defense, Jonathan. I mean, would I be crazy to say Kentucky could easily be a Final Four team?
No, you're not. If they went out, There's no way that this team doesn't at least get that distinction of this is a possible last weekend team.
Quinn, what do you think about Kentucky? Did you get to watch the game last night?
I watched some of it. Yeah, I think they're definitely starting to click. I think they can make a run, but there's so much parity, it seems, in college basketball this year that I don't know who will be in the Final Four. There doesn't seem to be any clear-cut teams.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, Quinn. When the stage is the biggest is when these superstars come out and they start playing like Kentucky, Kansas. I'm not saying Oklahoma is, honestly. I'm not ready to sit here and say, Jonathan, that I think Oklahoma is truly the best team in the country. I mean, of course, the record and what they've done, but I feel stronger about Kansas and Kentucky than I do Oklahoma, honestly.
I don't know. I've watched Oklahoma a couple times this year, including their game against LSU last night. I caught bits and pieces of. I think that's a pretty good team. I think Buddy Hield's the best point guard in college basketball. And one of the things about college basketball, you know, and I tried to push this narrative for a while, but you need a big man, you need a really good big man to win a title. But what you see it year after year, it's all about who has the point guard. You need very good point guard play to win a national championship. We saw it last year with Tyus Jones and Grayson Allen and Spurs. We saw it with Connecticut. They did beat that 8-seed Kentucky team with Shabazz Napier. You see it with Mario Chalmers.
That was a 9-seed, wasn't it?
I want to say they were a 9 that year.
Our Kentucky was an 8 or 9.
Yeah, I
want to
say Connecticut was a
9,
which is amazing. I have a 9 and an 8 in the final. So I think you need a good, competent point guard, and it doesn't hurt to have the best point guard in the nation, Buddy Hield. So I think that Oklahoma is a legitimate team. I think they're a serious contender. They can shoot the lights out like nobody's business. And when they need to, they can play excellent lockdown defense. I really like that basketball team.
You know, in the tournament, mm-hmm. give me teams like Michigan State. Give me Bobby Petrino and those guys, Calipari, Krzyzewski. Give me the teams that's been there before. Give me North Carolina this year. I like them. And Kansas, of course. But these are, to me, A&M, Iowa, Villanova. Villanova's a poser, and they've always been. The Xavier team, Jonathan. Now, that's a good group of guys right there. That's a good team. And I think they could do something in a tournament.
Yeah, and Xavier is an excellent basketball team. They have an excellent coach. He's the younger brother, I believe, of Arizona State. I really like what I've seen from Xavier this year. I really like what I saw from last year. I thought they were an excellent team. And they seem to consistently be a team that, come March, just like Dayton in all reality, finds a way to sneak up on everybody. And they shouldn't surprise anymore, but they always do.
Well, we're getting close to March Madness, one of the best times of the year for this show. I remember we started Way In Sports Talk when the March Madness was beginning about 4 years ago, and that was when Kentucky won the championship. I can't remember exactly who they beat, but man, they were good, Jonathan.
Kansas.
Who did they play?
I think they beat Kansas. I think. Was it Kansas?
I'm not sure, but they pistol whipped them. I mean, it was.
I think it
was that Kentucky team. That Kentucky team was good, but that's when we started out. So it's always sentimental to me that March Madness is coming around. Anything y'all want to talk about before we go, guys? Jonathan, start with you since Quinn doesn't watch movies. We'll start with you.
There's not really too much on my radar right now. Just counting down the days until pitchers and catchers report for baseball. I'm really excited for this upcoming baseball season. Obviously, hockey's still going on. I mean, if you care about hockey, pay attention. I tend to watch it a lot. I bet it a lot. And, you know, even if you don't really pay attention to hockey, you've probably heard the John Scott controversy that's gone on. And I think keep an eye on the NBA. What's going on with Blake Griffin? I mean, he decides to up and punch a trainer who apparently is a good friend of his, swipes his hand. I'm saying he's out for a month. We all know he's out at least 2 months, if not more. I mean, is Blake Griffin now on the trade block? We know Kevin Love is most likely on the trade block with Cleveland. I mean, could we see a swap right then and there with those two? I don't know. But I think the NBA's trade deadline is going to be very intriguing this year because you're going to have some bigger names out there, not to mention, you know, Kevin Durant's contract expires at the end of the year. So, what's going to happen there? Other than that, I mean, I'm excited for the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be fun. But it is what it is.
Yeah, well, we're going to be on Wednesday night to go over National Signing Day. Of course, but Blake Griffin's the most overrated player in the world. I think he went out on injury, and they found out that they were better without him, and it pissed him off, and now his roid rage is coming out, Quinn. Quinn, what do you got for me?
Jonathan, I have a question for you. When I was little, I used to really like watching baseball, and how can I really get into liking watching baseball again when my White Sox really aren't doing the greatest? I keep up, but, like, watching games-wise, like, I can't just sit down and watch a baseball game on TV like I used to.
I can't either.
So
Jonathan, I'm going to ask
so
you that, too.
So what would you say to try and get me back into it?
Well, whenever you're a fan of the Chicago Crap Sox, life's going to be difficult for you. But, I mean, I played baseball. I'm in a couple dynasty leagues, so I go to a lot of minor league games and scout kids. And I got contacts inside baseball, and I guess that's what keeps me really into it. But
fantasy baseball,
that's
the only way.
Yeah, I mean, if you played baseball, you'll enjoy watching baseball because you see the subtle nuances. You'll notice things that the average fan doesn't. I love baseball. I love watching a game. I think it's a good way to spend, you know, 3.5 hours on a Tuesday night just to unwind and relax. You know, it's just pay attention to all the little things. You know, if you want to get back into baseball and you were previously into it, just find what you loved about the game in the first place. You know, for me, sadly enough, it was guys like Barry Bonds who really dragged me into baseball. And then when I moved to being a pitcher as a player, it became all about watching the pitchers and seeing what they're doing and understanding the greatness behind it. And, you know, I grew up because Barry Bonds was my favorite player and the Rays weren't established when I grabbed a hold of baseball. The Giants became my first love, you know, so I got to witness Barry Bonds in his greatest prime. I remember watching him play games down at Key West where the sun's up and it's, you know, it's midnight here, but the sun's still up out in San Francisco. You know, so you just have to find something to clutch onto. And I know it's hard for you to do as a White Sox fan, but if I have advice for you as a fan of the whatever they are, watch Chris Sale and watch Jose Abreu.
Hold on just a second. Why do you like the White Sox more than the Cubs? Why not the Cubs?
Well, when I was little, we had a family friend that works for the White Sox. And so before my dad got to me, because my dad likes the Cubs, but so before he got to me, he beat me to it, and I became a White Sox fan.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Quinn, I'm going to be up in Chicago in March, so I'm going to go meet them.
You are?
They're not playing in March, but I'm going to go try to see them this year, the White Sox and the Cubs. I want to go see both of them. How far are the stadiums away, the Cubs
not
and the White
far.
Sox? Aren't they just right across town? I mean,
pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, just be careful when you go to a White Sox game because it's not in the best neighborhood. It's on the south side of town, and that's the more.
No, I don't give a damn about those thugs. I'll beat the hell out of them. I don't care about people like that, man. Damn.
Man, that's like going to a game at Tropicana down here. That's why they're moving the stadium out, is because the area is not the best. You know, it's kind of, you know, and it's funny because the way the Rays are moving is actually following the Braves model. The Braves are moving from Turner to Kennesaw because most of the season ticket holders are in Kennesaw. Just like right now, it looks like the Rays aren't actually going to move to Tampa. They're going to move to a suburb out in Pasco County because most of the season ticket holders are in Pasco. And that's where I think baseball has an edge over a lot of other leagues, is that they actually try to move the stadiums to the fans, whereas in football and hockey and basketball, they just move them into the center of a city and say, go to it.
Yeah.
Quinn, I'm going to tell you this right quick. I'm going to tell you, you know, radio shows, if you want to see ratings crash on radio, you talk about baseball. And that's true. No matter how much you play. I played it. I loved it. I can watch it, you know, but fantasy baseball helped me keep up with it more. Like, it helped me pay attention. If you're not playing fantasy baseball, you're not going to be able to watch baseball consistently throughout the year. It just keeps you engaged, keeps you involved. But Jonathan, I mean, sports talk radio, baseball is a killer for sports talk radio. That's why you see Colin Cowherd, he never talks it. I mean, it's because nobody wants to listen to it. There's nothing exciting to people for the majority. I'm not talking about everybody because I can listen to baseball talk and enjoy it, but a lot of people don't want to hear it, Quinn. I mean, they want to hear football 365 days a year, except maybe a few times when we're talking the NBA Finals, playoffs, the March Madness, but football rules sports talk radio. But do you play fantasy football or baseball? Do you play fantasy baseball?
No, I don't.
I think you need to. To me, I think Jonathan said that, right? You said that. You got to play fantasy football.
Yeah, I have two dynasty leagues. So, like, you become kind of attached to your players because you're not starting over every year. And fantasy baseball, I would say, in the past 3 years, being a part of the two leagues I'm in has really jumped up my interest in just the minor leagues and the call-ups and the little trades and things like that that happen in baseball. that definitely helped me pay a lot more attention, especially when it was, oh, some rookie pitcher starting today. Well, is he good? Well, we haven't seen him. Well, then I'm going to watch him because if he's good, I'm going to try and pick him up.
Yeah, well, guys, hopefully you can join me Wednesday night. We're gonna get live and talk some recruiting, and it'll be a good time because some of the West Coast people will still be committing. And by then we'll know where Auburn, where Florida State, Alabama, Notre Dame, all our teams we follow, where they're going to end up. But don't be surprised when Nick Saban pulls off the number one class again. Because like Trey said, he's going to have about three or four or five stars come rolling in. I think Auburn's going to get a couple of those five stars on signing day. We'll see.
Well,
but a lot of time.
Because I was looking at on 247, they have the crystal ball, and you were talking about how Saban could land three or four more five stars. And I was just looking through at their at who they have rated as five stars in the uncommitted guys. And really, their crystal ball predictions, they weren't predicting Alabama to land. I'm not saying they couldn't, but I don't know if Alabama will be landing three or four more five stars.
You never know. Money talks, Quinn. Remember that. Money talks. All right, guys. Y'all be good. We'll see you Wednesday night. Everybody, take care of yourself. Great show tonight. Had some fun. Quinn, go watch a movie, for God's sake. Have a good week, guys.
All right, y'all. See y'all on Wednesday.
See ya.
See ya.